Welcome to the Micro College Podcast. This time on the podcast, we are excited to be speaking with Christine Deck from the Deck Family Farm in the beautiful Willamette Valley of Oregon. Thank you so much for joining us today, Christine.
Thank you for having me.
So just a few words of introduction here. The Micro College Podcast is a project of Thoreau College. We are a micro college located in rural southwestern Wisconsin. We are recording this in early March 2024. If you're listening to this and you're excited to learn more about Thoreau College and about our programs, please check out our website. We have a number of short programs coming up in spring and early summer 2024, including programs focused on agriculture. We've got a 3-week living on the land program coming up in April that's focused on regenerative design, biodynamics, and homesteading skills. We also have a month-long field school program that is a bioregional orientation to ecological literacy, lots of farm visits, foraging, and folk arts and crafts. We also have a Shakespeare intensive program leading up to the Varroqua Shakespeare Festival that will be happening in late June. And we are also accepting applicants for our fall semester program, the Metamorphosis Gap Year. I know, Christine, as we were here at the beginning, I wonder if you want to mention one of the reasons that we're speaking with you is the Deck Family Farm has its own educational programs. And I wonder if you just want to just mention that right at the outset, so anyone listening at the beginning here.
Deck Family Farm has a farm trainee program. We have 8 to 10 interns and apprentices a year. Some of those are continuing from previous years. The internship program is a first year program, and the apprenticeship program happens after a first year. The apprenticeship program usually encompasses some sort of project. So people in their first year narrow down their interests and identify a project that they want to work on. And then the second year and third year, sometimes even the fourth year, sometimes goes into that. We've been running the program for about 15 years, graduated easily 80 students or more. And I'd say half of those are in some segment of agriculture, which is really just really important to me that we're training people to continue this tradition and this heritage.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's really what we want to dig into today. This question of where are the people who are going to be producing our food and caring for our land in the future come from? It's a major question. We're here in farm country, lots of small farms. We've got family who are connected with Organic Valley and with other parts of the organic industry. And everyone is asking this question, where is the next generation of farmers going to come from? And I think that programs like the, Deck Family Farm and Thoreau College and some of the other micro colleges are part of this question. So before we dig into that, though, I want to introduce Christine and have her talk a bit about her life. So Christine Deck's journey as a farmer has been built out of determination and a deep-rooted passion for sustainable farming. Raised in the farming heartland of California's San Joaquin Valley, Christine grew up in a farming family that stretched back through generations. Her paternal grandfather tended to beef herds and walnut groves, while her maternal grandfather dedicated himself to dairy farming. However, the landscape of farming changed in the early 1970s when policies favoring large-scale corporate farming left small family operations like theirs struggling to survive. The trend was get big or get out. Despite seeing her family legacy lost to big ag, Christine held on to the dream of traditional, sustainable, and organic farming. Pursuing higher education at UC Davis as an animal service major, she initially aimed to attend medical school, viewing it as a means to gain the financial resources necessary to fulfill her farming aspirations. It was during her time at UC Davis that she met and married John Deck, and their shared vision for their future began to take shape. As their family grew to include 5 children, so did their dreams of farming. By the time Christine graduated from UC Berkeley in neurobiology, and John completed his master's in environmental science, it was obvious that the high land prices and barriers to entry in California's farming scene required them to seek opportunities elsewhere. In 2004, the Deck family made the decision to relocate to the Willamette Valley of Oregon, where land was more affordable and conducive to their farming ambitions. There, they founded Deck Family Farm, a thriving operation encompassing a diverse range of endeavors, from raising beef, hogs, and meat birds to producing cheese, butter, and eggs. The farm has grown to encompass a market garden, orchard, and tree nuts. Deck Family Farm is not just a business, it's also a community. With over 500 acres of grazed and cultivated land, 30 dedicated employees, and an education program welcoming 8 to 10 students annually, the farm is home to many of the Farmly members and a beacon of sustainable agriculture. From attending farmers markets and running a CSA program to supplying grocery stores, institutions, and wholesale accounts, Deck Family Farm embodies the values of stewardship, quality, and community enrichment that Christine and John hold dear. Now in their late 50s, with adult children and grandchildren on the farm, the Decks are looking at the future. And with the farm trainee program, they continue to answer the question, who will be the next generation to hold the practice of environmental stewardship, food sovereignty, and community engagement? Christine's hope is that her work will ignite and inspire more young farmers to invest in the farming lifestyle for generations to come. Thank you once again for that and for joining us today. And yeah, I wonder if you could just take us back here on the Micro College podcast. We always start with zeroing in on that phase of life when people are heading out on their own adventures. And you mentioned it here, but maybe we could go back there when you were 18, 19, 20 years old. You've got farming in your background. What are you doing in that? What were you doing in that phase of life? And what was shaping your experiences to what you eventually did?
Well, I left home a little earlier than most people did. I was raised working class, and rural. I didn't plan to go to college. I think I just wasn't raised in that class. But eventually, through just working kind of menial jobs, waiting tables, working with people who've been probably, doing it since they were in their late teens and they were in their 30s, decided maybe going to college was not a bad idea. Maybe there's something better there. And so I did go to community college. I transferred to UC Davis. I transferred in as an animal science major because it was a very non-impacted major at the time. I lived in the beef barn. And one of my jobs living in the beef barn was to the beef barn and the feedlot at UC Davis is a research facility. They have a vet school there. They do a lot of ag related research. And so in order to live in the beef barn, one of my jobs was to feed measure out chicken manure. They were feeding chicken manure to the cows, and the cows were in these very small cubicles. So they were just there was a study measuring rate of gain. And that was pretty transformative for me because I always knew I wanted to eventually get back to the farming lifestyle, even though as in that time I wasn't a I didn't I wasn't living on a farm or pursuing my ag future there. I was just out in the world trying to figure myself out. But definitely at that point, I thought I'd never want to be part of big ag or just this kind of like feedlot mentality of let's see what the poorest ingredients and the least amount that we could feed animals and least amount of space we can give them to get a rate of gain. That just felt really, I can't even find the word for it. Disgusting. Just that's not what I wanted to participate in. And I think it was probably about that time that I started really putting together because my family always struggled with money. Both my parents came from farming families that didn't have a lot of money, kind of lost their livelihood farming and then just got some other job just to get by. And so I think it was always in my head that if you wanted to farm, you had to either be big or be wealthy. And so I just started setting my sights on finding a career that I could make enough income that I could afford to farm in a way that wasn't like that. So I didn't, I don't think I had, I think I had a very vague notion of where I wanted to go, but not very specific. But I did know what I didn't want. And so then at UC Davis, that's when I met and married my husband. And he continued his academic career while I kind of stayed home and had kids. And then I re-entered the university scene later when my kids were a little bit older and ended up graduating with all my requirements to go to medical school because I saw that as a career that could bring in enough money that I could actually farm in a way that felt sustainable and holistic and small scale. And I kind of think I went beyond the question of my early 20s.
No, but that's really great. I really appreciate that story about feeding chicken manure to the cows, because that is
Yeah.
the visceral disgust is the right word, I think is so important that we cultivate the ability for people to have that response to things that are disgusting, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's funny too, because at the time, I went to Davis in the early 80s, people were saying things like organics, what people used to do before we knew better. Better living through chemicals was kind of this. I think the UC Davis is very different now. I think there's probably quite a few organic programs and permaculture programs, but it wasn't like that when I was there. It was like, well, you're organic if you don't know any better. Like, organic just means you do nothing, not that you do something.
Right. Yeah, that's good to hear that there might be some of that, because I think if you read, just observe the agriculture, big ag, where it came from, thinkers like Wendell Berry and Wes Jackson, some of the kind of people who articulated this. I mean, the agricultural university, the research university, is a big part of the story of how we got to where we are. And also, I think, your story, of coming up from working class, a farm background, is very familiar. I mean, people who grow up on the land have a love for it, know they want to do it, but can't see any pathway to do it, is really, it's a big part of the landscape. As well as people who do not come from that background and are curious and want some way into it, which is another part of the
And
land.
it's tragic in a way too that, I mean, I think this is one of my passions for training younger new farmers is that for me, looking back, the fact that I thought I had to be wealthy to farm well, that's weird. We don't want that. You don't want to have a whole nother income so that you can do right by the animals and the food and the people and the land. Like, we want to empower, like, we want to give people resource to do the right thing, not encourage them not to. I've seen all these. There's a lot of food films about these farmers who, are just, they've kind of given into the system and they're doing these huge. I don't think they want to do that. I think if you gave them a better, they wouldn't do it. I mean, not the people that I knew. I grew up in foster farms land where, everybody, their parents had immigrated or their grandparents had immigrated. They'd started raising chickens. But my generation, they were still raising chickens, but their whole job was just to pick up dead chicks in these 500,000 bird houses. It was just, it's gross. It's not, that's not, that's just food manufacturing. It's not a system. And my peers all had other jobs. So they would do other jobs. They'd go home at night to pick up their dead chicks out of their chick houses.
It's striking. I think that not enough people realize how much of our food is produced, and whether it's, I would say, conventional or organic, sustainable agriculture type food, is produced by people who are doing this as their hobby, or as like they need to find an off-farm job or something else to do it. And even, like I say, even the chemical corn and soybean farms in our area, you'll see that people are doing it at night because they have some other job that pays the bills, actually. And it's that seems like a real misallocation and just a real problem in the society. So yeah,
Agreed.
so I'm curious. So you are, I think people who have the ability to work with animals and with the land, with plants, and with all of the infrastructure needed to run a farm, are not always the people who also have the skills to work with students and with a community, right? Those are two different skill sets, and it takes a special set. And I'm wondering at what point you knew, and you and your husband knew, that this was the kind of farm that you wanted to have, that was welcoming in students and welcoming in a community. And how did that get started?
Your question is just like, how do we bridge that or merge those two? I think that we, my husband and I, both do it to different degrees. We had five children together, so we were pretty familiar with having a full home of our kids and their friends. I think John and I are uniquely, my husband and I are uniquely predisposed to living with a lot of people. Even through college, just everywhere we've been very open to community. So when our kids started, getting to the place in their lives where they're exploring what do they want to do with their life and what direction they want to go, we kind of lost our workforce in a way, right, on the farm because they want to go to concerts and they want to take ballet lessons and they want to be on the soccer team. So at that time, somebody suggested, hey, woofers are young people want to learn how to farm. How about if you open up your farm and start teaching woofers? And that was fun. I mean, it was great. It brought a light, like a life and a vibrancy. And I think it also introduced our kids to, hey, this isn't just something that our parents do. Like, people really want to do it. So culturally, that was a nice influx into our,
And before we go too much
it
farther, I
had.
mean, for people who don't know what WOOF is, could you just say just briefly what that is?
Yeah, WOOF is an acronym for Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms. And it's all over the world. And you sign up on a website, WWOOF, and it just gives you profiles of all these farms where you can go and WOOF. And WOOF is great. I think it's a really good experience for young people. My kids ended up doing it. My kids WOOFed all over the world, which was great, Brazil and Ireland and the Philippines. But it's not a way, as we thought, oh, this isn't a re labor replacement. That's not, you're not going to grow a sustainable business by people who come to your farm and want to, collect eggs for 2 weeks. That's just not a thing. So it did have its pluses in that it kind of dipped our toe into the educational scene or what it was like to host other people. And then from there, just from those experiences, and then our kids all went to college. They all wanted to pursue their college degree, which is a good thing. I'm not saying it's not a good thing, but I do want to hope that we can expand our minds beyond what education is, other things besides just universities, because that's really going to matter to family farms. If you have this person that you've trained and they know everything about the business, and then they leave for 4 years. They come back, it's great. And some of our kids have.
That
But
congratulations.
my point, I think I'm just trying to get to, woofing was not going to be a labor replacement. So then we kind of segued into, okay, well, what are other programs that maybe could bring a little bit more longer term stays, could help with the labor issues, and maybe we could make a bigger effect. And then that's when we started with more long-term internships. But even then, I mean, I think at some point our program grew to the point where you have to say, you're not going to run a business with interns. That's just not going to happen. But it was in that process of our kids leaving, bringing in students, getting our feet under us in a way that we could even imagine what a business would look like. And then we were able to, and then it became very clear too, if we wanted to continue to educate people, you can have people to educate them. Like, John and I are not enough. We are not enough to teach all these young people coming through. So now we have, a very strong farm manager, lots of cattle experience, lots of pig experience, a poultry manager, so we have these people now who can not only run the farm while the interns are getting educated and learning, but they can also mentor people too. It's a really nice combination. It works great. It has its negatives too, but it's solid right now, 15 years later.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. I think, I grew up in a farm family and around farm families, and I know that not every farmer, even the excellent farmers, would be able to do what you're doing and to work with people at different levels and train people. So it's definitely one of the reasons I wanted to
Yeah.
share your story with our audience and with our students here, and just the opportunity that you're offering. So maybe yeah, along those lines. So you've got, like you say, these couple two different sort of programs, you could say. Could you, yeah, maybe let's dive a bit more into those. What are the lengths of these programs? How many people are doing them at a time? And what are the kind of the terms there that you, what are you expecting of the participants and what should they expect from you?
Cool. Yeah. So people usually find us through various methods, either our website or there's some clearing houses that list internships. They reach out, they go through an interview process that includes, what have you done, to further your farming career, and what will this do for you? So there's a considerable amount of vetting that goes on. And once we find a candidate that seems like they want what we have to offer, and they seem like they're going to be a good fit for our program, which often includes a lot of forgiveness and understanding, and just understanding that we're not, we're not a university. We're just people at a certain place and time doing a certain thing with the resources that we have. And that I think is really key for me. When I bring somebody on, I want them to know that this is just what we're doing, and I want to share it with you. And
Yeah.
I hope I inspire you to do something completely uniquely you in your place in your time with your resources. That's really the heart, I think, of the program. Farming is such a cool endeavor in that way, because we live in such a world of professionalism where there's right and wrong, and this is the correct way and this is the wrong way. But we're all just figuring it out. I mean, that's so cool about farming, is there's a million ways to solve a problem. It really is pulls on all of your resources, mind and financial and physical and everything. So then they start in the program. The first year is a rotation through different blocks, so to speak. So depending on what we need and what people's interests are, they'll spend 3 to 4 months in a space. So often it's dairy. People will start in the dairy, just learning how to milk. That often includes making dairy products as well. In the dairy program, people are also learning how to set up lines and to herd. So they're learning some animal husbandry. And then from the dairy block, they might go to pigs or poultry, depending on the season. We only raise meat birds in the summer, so there's a lot of meat bird work in the summer. So they might do a poultry block for 2 to 3 months. And then maybe they want to go learn sausage making. So we have a sausage maker. So they might work with a sausage maker, or they might do marketing. That's a new block that we've developed just this year, realizing how much time we can spend training somebody just in marketing, through farmers markets, through the marketing meeting, the strategies, delivering products, packing products. There's like a 40-hour a week just in marketing, which is fascinating to me. How much time? I mean, we can have a full block for somebody just marketing. But then there's also other little aspects that people fill their time in with too. Like, we have horses, and we do breed some dogs, some livestock guardian dogs. There's just little bits of things that people pull into their program, very led by them, what they want to do. Like lambing is something. We don't have a huge lamb program, but in the spring we lamb. So there's a number of hours in lambing. So people kind of put together their program. The first year includes an externship where we ask people to leave the farm for a week or two to some other neighboring farm to see what they're doing, or some other program.
That's great.
And then people have three goals or projects that they pursue throughout the year. Probably one of the coolest projects was building a cob house, a very small house, but one of our students built a cob house in his first and second year. He bridged it. And cob, if you're not familiar with that, it's just a building technique with mud, straw, and sand. It's pretty popular here in Oregon. Another project was somebody built a live willow wall. So the projects can be big or small. Another intern project was bringing the dairy up to a raw meat certification, which is just a raw milk handling certification. So yeah, all kinds of really cool projects. And then, if someone's interested in pursuing a second year, maybe they have a big project that they want to pursue. One of our third years right now has developed a bread business, and she's going gangbusters. She developed a sourdough starter and has started selling bread. And so it's kind of cool because DEC has a marketing outlet for people who want to start a business. Another person has started a coffee business,
Oh.
no longer with the farm, but so it's kind of an incubator too for people who want to start these businesses. Yeah.
Yeah,
That
that's
was
it is really remarkable. I mean, in several ways, and just the range of things that people have an opportunity to dip into and experience there, and also there's a beautiful structure that you've created that I really appreciate that is very inspiring. So, can you just for on the ground there, people are living on the farm. How are people having meals together? What is the nature of the community that forms there on the farm?
Yeah, so we eat 5 dinners a week. Everybody participates in the dinner schedule. And 2 are open nights. But with the program, we all eat together. It's very different than some programs where there's like a student house or a student section, and those people just kind of interact, and then the family lives separate. We're pretty integrated. So I think it's unique in that way, and that we just enjoy that style of living. And now that our kids are older and they're having their kids, we're all just kind of, it's pretty communal, not in a California hippie communal kind of way, just more like we all spend a lot of time together. And then that gives us opportunity to work on community skills, like how to ask for things you need, how to set limits, how to be polite, how to be kind, how to be flexible, how to broker all kinds of things. And it has a lot of humor to it. We spend one night a week, it's called community night. And everybody has to come to dinner. So everybody doesn't have to come to dinner every night. It's not a requirement that you have to come to dinner every night, but we encourage people to. But community night is the one night where everybody who lives here comes to dinner and we share a meal. And then after the meal, we kind of do housekeeping things like, hey, you guys, can you please clean the strainer, the food out of the strainer and sink, like things like that. Or hey, so and so, can you bring in more hardwood next time as opposed to softwood, because we heat the homes with wood stoves. So we kind of, it's funny, one intern said, I was at another farm and they had this, but they called it bitch night. Complaint, so you kind of frame it different. And we do, because I feel like there's so much humor and forgiveness that the community just, and we've been doing this for a while. It's not always like that. We've definitely had some rough spots. I think even at one point, my husband and I were so, we had just, it was, things weren't working out very well. We had a very low enrollment and we just stopped and we didn't have anybody here for about a year. But that was like the only time in 10 years we hadn't had anybody at the farm. We just took a reset and then we dove back in. But what I've noticed is the culture stays very similar. I mean, we find it might have to do too with just the pretty intensive vetting we do. Like we find people who have good humor, they're flexible, they're resilient, they're forgiving. And I think that goes a long way to just create a really happy community. And I think in order to farm the way we're doing with the diversity of enterprises we have and the amount of money we're making, because it's not, this isn't super profitable. No one's getting rich farming. Having a lot of hands has a lot of advantages, but you can't have a lot of hands working together unless people get along. And so those skills are what we're trying to build too. And humor's a big part of it, just being able to laugh at yourself and forgive others and just get up every day and keep trying. So those are the values we're trying to instill, and they seem to be here somehow. It's also a lot of magic, I'm pretty sure.
There's always that. Yes, indeed.
Not everything's intentional. Things just happen well sometimes, and sometimes they don't.
Humor, hard work, and magic. That's the recipe for just about anything. I love that. Yes, I think it is. It's very inspiring to hear what you've described there. And I think you mentioned earlier just the qualities that it takes to run a farm. The persistence, the problem solving, the diversity of kind of skills that a person needs to cultivate. I think is it's something that, again, I hope to more people realize like how much of our culture, how much of our the infrastructure and technology that we appreciate in the world today is built up really out of people who grew up in a farming background. This kind of diversified small farm that has some dairy cows and has some machines and has some cropland. If you look back through the 20th century, the 19th and 20th century, people who are leading the space program and the American military in the world wars and the and a lot of the infrastructure, really some a farm background is in many of those stories. And I think you can see there is some lack of that is something that you start to experience. People who really know how to do things and problem solve without an instruction manual is something that we are starting to lack in a way that's noticeable.
It's really noticeable. And when we get college students, people who finish their 4-year degree, I feel like I spend the first 3 months just trying to get them out of their head and into their body. Just stop intellectualizing everything and cue into that sixth sense that you've been schooled out of. That is a big effort. And it's almost universal with people who get university degrees. And again, not putting down a university degree. I have one. I think it's a worthwhile pursuit, and it's also a very different segmented, what do you say, like just right, wrong, black, white. You get an A on a test, or you get a C on a test. It's like farming is so different. One of the I think a good example of this is sometimes, just telling people how much to feed the cows. Well, it depends. Like, what stage are they in their lactation? How cold is it? Have they been on pasture? What part of the year is it? Are there calves with them? Are there not calves with them? Like, you can't write that down. You've got it. People have to get that in their head. Or, you go out to the morning meeting and you hear some sound in the brooder. Well, what is it? Like, just cueing into these things that if you're worried about right, wrong, black, white, good, bad, you're not going to get it. You've got to step out of that and put yourself in this feeling state of what's it feel like today?
Yeah.
I love that. It's so different than professionalism. I mean, farming is a profession, but it's so non-professional.
That's such a great point. I think that our technology is based on binary logic, ones and zeros, right? And biology and living things and ecology is not like that. And I think that is something that you can get from an education that includes working with plants and animals and with soils and with the weather and with other people as well in an active way that you're describing. It is there's a subtlety and a nuance that is required that's different from working with the digital technology in particular. Yeah. So yeah, maybe if you've got maybe you could characterize where are the participants in these programs, where are they coming from and what's drawing them to spend some time at your farm?
It's a lot of what's drawing them is a lot of what we're talking about. I think a lot of people are very aware of the shrinking scope of diversity and just training in the basics of life and where's our food going to come from. A lot of people are motivated by that. I've heard the term rejecting the urban lifestyle. I think that's kind of I heard people say that. Various maybe rejections of certain thing, but I think the majority of people just really want to be part of food sovereignty. They want to be able to grow their own food. And that's worldwide. I mean, we have people from all over the world. This year we'll have students coming from Sri Lanka, Pakistan, and Kenya. Last year we had interns from Peru and Haiti. We just have the international component is significant, and it's surprising how people in other parts of the world, they're experiencing the same thing. The student from Sri Lanka that we had 2 years ago was like, people are just spraying everything. They're just spraying the shit out of everything. They're killing everything, and nobody is saying anything, and everybody's just getting away with it. So it seems funny because I feel like that story is told in California and everywhere around the world in Africa, and it's just people are concerned. They want to see a future that is healthy for them and their kids and just for the earth. I think people are really bought into the idea that we've got to do something to be part of a solution of growing cleaner food in a more environmentally sensitive, sustainable way. I feel like I got off on a track there, but yeah, that's the students that we see. People are really they want to be part of a solution.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
there's a certain number of people want to do homesteading skills too, which I think I mentioned earlier that we don't really offer homesteading skills, but I think just by the nature of what it is to be sustainable, there are homesteading skills that are practiced, like hide tanning and starting fires and chopping wood and building homes. So actually, it's funny. Yeah, homesteading actually is kind of a part of it, even though not intentionally.
Yeah.
And cooking, and just cooking for big groups, knowing how to put flavors together and cook meals that people like and are healthy. And yeah, all the things.
Yeah, I think that there's a natural overlap there. I think you've been doing this, you said, for 15 years already. Do you where have people gone from this? I mean, it seems like you really are, you're oriented towards people who are serious about making a career, making a life around farming and a farm business and that sort of thing. Has that been successful? Where have people gone with that? And what are the stories that you've heard from your past participants?
Some of our foreign students go back to their family farms or go back to places where they know people that are farming in cooperatives. We've had people go into in Wisconsin, actually. One of our students is now extension agent
Oh.
near Wausau. I'm not sure where you're at, but yeah, He came from Switzerland, and now he's, yeah, an extension agent there. We have people that are starting their own farms or going back to their family farms that were kind of defunct, like, just got turned into cornfields or whatever, and they're starting to re-diversify those farms. And then just people who, I think we have someone who's a farmer's market manager. I mean, all segments of the agricultural system. Some people are farm managers or, yeah, just continued their journey into farming in one way or another. So either owning, running, helping to run farms, or advising farmers, educating farmers. We have a student from Peru right now who will go back, and his job is to educate communities to farm together. So he works with farmer cooperatives back in Peru.
Awesome. Yeah, a question that I get quite often from young people is how I'm interested in homesteading or in farming or I'm interested in agriculture, but I really see no pathway to owning land or having access to land. And I'm wondering if you know, if that's a question that you're receiving, what advice you give to young people who have that question, if they don't have a family farm to go back to.
Exactly. No, that's very real. I think it's important for people to understand that you do not have to own land to farm. You can lease. We have a very profitable sheep farmer around here who owns absolutely nothing. And he lives in a house on a rented, in a rented unit. And he runs 30,000 sheep in the valley. He's a big grower, and it's all
Wow.
on leased land. So you do not have to own land to farm at all. That's important to know. There are also, in Oregon anyway, and I'm not familiar with other parts of the world, but there are a number of organizations that are helping match young farmers to aging farmers, because as we know, the age of farmers is like 60 right now or something, 65, the median age. So there are many people who are retiring and farming who want to see their farm continue in farming. And so there's a group in our area called Friends of Family Farmers, and they have kind of like a matching system where you can go online and say, hey, I'm someone looking for this. And I think that's been pretty successful. We've used it ourselves and found matches. I think advice I would give is learn how to work in a group with people, because I really feel like that's the way farms were. They were extended family units. And I think that if you want to have a diverse farm, that's the future of farming. Some of the most successful farming families in our area are the Mennonites. I'm not suggesting people become Mennonite. I'm not a Mennonite, but I'm just saying those systems are working because people are continuing to rely on each other and to pool their resources and work together. We've kind of lost that in our white Protestant culture, that ability. And I do feel like we're trying to teach that here. Like, let's all figure out how to work together and respect each other and support each other in our goals. That's super big. It's really big. But there's something else I wanted to say about that, about having enough money to farm and working together. Okay, sorry, it's gone. Might come back.
We'll come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, what you're saying about working in community and collaboration, I think is a really one of the really important things that I see that you're doing and we're striving to do too. Those are, you know, working with tools, working with animals and with the land is essential, and working with people, marketing as well as conflict and communication and all, and the art of you know, having meals together is like you say, deep. That's how agriculture has been, and is, I think, really farming and food and stewardship of the land is part of culture, right? It's agriculture. It's not just a business. It's not just a science. It is. It is part of culture.
More. And it's kind of not become a culture now, right? Now it's just big ag. It's just business. It's just a
Right.
guy owning, $5 million combines, and he hires the students to run them on at the season. It just came back to me what I wanted to say, Jacob.
Great.
And maybe it's good sometimes to avoid cautionary tales, but I'm going to go ahead and share this tale.
Excellent.
Because I think one advice I would give to people what not to do is to believe that just them and their partner can start this farm and just run it. And then inevitably, probably they're going to want a couple kids, and then their kids are going to go to school, and then they're just going to be the two of them with their kids wanting to do all the things that kids want to do, and people burn out. And I've seen so many couples burn out that way. They just don't have enough resource going in. It's just a husband and a wife, already enough pressure on a husband and wife, even if you had normal jobs, let alone farming. And then you put kids into the picture, and kids want to be social. They want to do it. They're not going to just, unless you're Mennonite, you're not just going to keep them home. They're going to want to do all the things. So I have seen that fail and people burn out, good people with really good intentions, and they just can't do it. It's too much pressure. So that's the one thing I would say don't do is just don't say, my partner and I are going to start this farm and we're going to have two kids and it's all going to be great. And we're going to, only work 8 hours a day and play guitar on the porch, because I don't think that happens. I think you need a group of people and resource to rely on. I'm not saying it's easy, but I don't think you can. I don't know. I think it's a myth that it's going to be relaxing and, all wonderful with just this nuclear family with young kids. It seems like it's really good for burning people out. That's what I've seen in my area. Not a huge sample size, but
I can
that would be my
confirm.
caution.
Definitely have seen it here too, right? That there is, even for people who are looking to alternative models of agriculture and culture, there is the solitary kind of heroic individual or nuclear family model that is very, very strong in our culture that doesn't match up with really any, even in our own culture. I think back to my grandparents' generation who were farming here. They were not They were in the context of a very richly networked local community that included the church and the one room schoolhouse and lots of other like institutions, including a great big family that were able to share labor and things like that. So that's actually the heritage we have in agriculture and again, the Mennonites and the Amish, we have a lot of Amish in our area who model that already, currently. So
Yeah, I don't want to be anti-education because I came from a family. I was did not come from a family of educated people. Nobody I knew went to college in any sides of my family. And I think my parents kind of had an attitude about education. It was like, well, they kind of had it. They had a southern accent, so forgive me here, but they said those who can't do teach, and those who can't teach administrate. That was kind of like they're like kind of negative take on it, but I kind of maybe get it now that I'm older, is that if we define education as one type of thing, where and you see this around the world in India and these developing countries where they just want their kids to go to school and have a better life than they had. They don't want them to have to be working the land, but then what's going to happen, man? We're abandoning the landscape for this ideal so that people can buy refrigerators and all these, Western consumable goods. It's going, I just think, I don't know, we've got to spread our idea of what an education is to encompass all kinds of things. It's not just getting a degree and becoming a physician or a lawyer. It's could be all kinds of things. Could be just going to a farm for 4 years and scratching the surface of what it is to farm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a
Well,
different lifestyle. Right. It's not just a
absolutely. Yeah, so I know that you actually have to go here soon and you're a farmer, so you're busy. So I really appreciate all of your time. And maybe just in conclusion, if you could just remind people about where to find out about this. And also there is like is a cycle on what time of year that you're accepting applications. And also one thing maybe you didn't mention, the financial dimension of this. I think that's also a remarkable thing I wanted to let you explain.
The financial dimension, meaning how people can afford to be in a program.
Yes.
Okay, we have a stipend. Yeah. So the first year students are $10,000 stipend, and second and third are 20. And then if people run businesses, then they take portions of that too. So yeah, we make sure that people, have car payments or student loans, which is very real, are not suffering financially while they're in the program. We try to give them a stipend so that they don't have to have those financial worries while they're in the program. And then all food and basic things are covered. And if people don't have habits, bad habits, they usually pair with a little bit of savings to start their own thing. So there's that. And then how people find us, well, we're Deck Family Farm. You can go online, Deck Family Farm. We have our internship advertised at the website. And then also ATRA is a really good clearinghouse for all things sustainable farming, ATTRA.
Yeah.
Yeah. And was there something else that you wanted me to say in
The
that?
time frame, yeah. What time of year do you are you
Oh, right. No, we do rolling. We have rolling applications because we're running all year round. We have a market garden, we do beef, we do livestock, orchard fruits, everything. So we're going year round. We actually have a full diet CSA that runs year round. Yeah. And right now we're in some really unique situation where we have 8 women in our program and 0 men. So I have a special call out for male energy. It wasn't purposeful. I don't know what it is, but women are awesome. We got a lot of strong women here. And looking for some strong men too.
Awesome.
Thank
Christine,
you for the
thank you so much for your
plug.
time. And I really, yeah, I think I wanted to share this with as many people as possible. I think what you're offering
Thank
is
you.
really remarkable, and I hope that we are also able to inspire more people, more farms, and more models like this around the country and around the world.
Appreciate that. Thank you so much, Jacob.